This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Free money for everyone. It's called Basic Income Guarantee, and it's an idea that's starting to gain traction in many parts of the world. Everyone in the society would receive a single basic income to provide a comfortable living where they choose to, whether they choose to work or not. But they only are getting enough for one person to survive on. It's not a lot of money. But it does sound like what some people would think would be a liberal's dream, but it is getting support across the political spectrum, including libertarians. And economists say it would boost the overall economy. Well, what do you think about the possibility of basic income guarantee? Do you think something like this would work in the United States? Or do you think everyone would just shuck it and just quit their jobs and start taking in that free money? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet us at @tprsource. And we're joined this half hour by Professor Matt Zielinski. He teaches philosophy at the University of San Diego. He's the co-director of the USD's Institute for Law and Philosophy. He's published numerous articles about the intersection of politics, law, economics. And he recently wrote the article, The Libertarian Case for Basic Income, for libertarianism.org. Matt, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, David. It's nice to be here.
So let's we'll get to the libertarian part of this in just a little bit. Let's do a little more defining and outlining and explaining what we're doing here. So basic income guarantee, how does that work?
Well, basic income guarantee is kind of a shorthand way of referring to a whole bunch of proposals that can often end up differing quite a bit in their details and in some important ways. But what they all have in common is that they involve cash transfers rather than in-kind transfers like food stamps or something of that nature that are unconditional and universal. So in other words, you don't have to demonstrate financial need to qualify for these transfers. You don't have to demonstrate that you're unable to work because you're disabled or anything like that. You get them essentially just for being a citizen.
So this is a bottom floor for incomes for everyone in society. Generally, it's assumed it's going to be just for citizens in this society so that people can't be completely, totally poor and not have enough to eat or to get by on.
That's right. The basic idea, at least as far as the idea is advocated by people of a more conservative or libertarian nature, is to provide a kind of minimum safety net. You give people some cash so that they can meet their basic needs. It's not intended to provide a luxurious lifestyle, and maybe not even enough to live a very comfortable lifestyle, but it's enough to provide you with the means to avoid destitution, at least.
And is something like this already in existence? Are some countries, are they doing this?
Well, yes and no. You have instances that are like a basic income in various respects, but most of them sort of fall short in one way or another from being what I would describe as a full basic income scheme. So you have, for instance, right here in the United States, you have the Alaska Permanent Fund, which starting in 1982 began making unconditional cash transfers to all citizens of the state, financed by Alaska's oil revenues. That amount varies from year to year depending on what those oil revenues are, but it ranges from around $1,500 per person up to a peak, I think, of around $3,200. So if you've got a family of five people making $3,200, that's around $15,000, $16,000 a year for a family of five. Or in a lower amount, something closer to 10. So that's one program that has probably the most in common with a basic income program. And then you have various other programs, such as Mexico's Oportunidades and Brazil's Bolsa Família Family, which involve cash transfers. So you're giving the poor cash and letting them decide what they want to spend that money on themselves. But what separates those programs from a basic income or from Alaska's program is that those cash transfers are conditional in some way. So with Brazil's program, it's conditional upon sending your children to school. So you get something like $13 a month per child attending school up through, you know, a certain age, and then it increases after that.
So what are we? What can we learn from? These are not what we're talking about exactly right now. Alaska is not exactly a social program where they're trying to provide a minimum floor for a safety net for everyone. It's just something that's developed over the course of years, I guess, because of the abundance of revenue coming from the oil industry there. But yeah. What can we tell? Do people, do they just stop working and they just say, hey, give me the free money? Or how does that work?
No, what you learn is that people, generally speaking, seem to use the money pretty well. They don't stop working in neither of those programs, Brazil's or Mexico's. Is the money anything like sufficient to stop working, even once you take into account the fact that the costs of living are significantly lower? What people seem to be doing is spending the money on the kinds of things you would expect responsible parents to spend the money on. Mexico actually did a controlled experiment where it gave some people money for a while, and then it gave other people the equivalent of food stamps, and then it looked to see what the people who were given money spent that money on. And they spent about the same amount of money on food as people who were given the food stamps did. So it doesn't look like they're wasting it on drugs or alcohol or expensive frivolities. And then when you look at outcomes, you see real and substantial outcomes in terms of sort of human well-being. So in Brazil, after a few years of running this program, you're able to notice that children's weight had improved. They'd gotten to a more healthy weight. Vaccination rates and prenatal care had improved, possibly because of the conditional nature of that program. So, I mean, you had to have your kid in school to get the money. So going to school sort of got you in the network for these vaccinations and prenatal care that parents otherwise would have avoided.
Sure. And so here we are looking down the road, and we're seeing this revolution in automation coming our way with self-driving cars. We no longer need truck drivers and all sorts of things happening. Watson, the thinking computer, taking away jobs all the time. So there's thought that there's going to be this giant wave of unemployment of low-skilled labor in society, and something like this was going to have to be considered. What do you think about that?
That is an argument that a number of people who agree with me on the desirability of a basic income make. They view this as an increasingly urgent safety net, given the looming technological unemployment that they see coming down the road. I don't find that to be a terribly plausible worry myself. My own view is that technological unemployment tends to be merely a transitory phenomenon, and that jobs are created.
Right.
As long as jobs are destroyed,
new jobs come up, and we don't know what those jobs are yet. So we're going to talk about that some more. Basic income guarantee here on The Source. Call in 210-614-8980. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. Coming up in the next half hour, we're going to be talking with Asif Manvi, the correspondent for The Daily Show, about his new book release. And with me right now, Professor Matt Zwolinski. He is a libertarian, a big thinker, professor of philosophy at the University of San Diego, recently wrote the article Libertarian Case for Basic Income for libertarianism.org. Back to this idea that robots are possibly going to eliminate millions of jobs over the coming decades. You don't see that as a possibility, but some people do, and people are using that as a case to make for basic income. So if you don't believe in that, why do you think we should have basic income?
Well, there are two kinds of reasons for favoring a basic income, depending on which group I'm trying to convince, right? So when I talk to other libertarians, the case I have to make to them is that we should have any welfare state at all, because most libertarians think that that kind of thing is kind of morally off limits for the government to do. It involves the use of force to take money from some people and give it to other people, and they don't think the government has any business engaged in that kind of thing. So when I talk to other libertarians, I have to make a kind of moral argument for why some form of safety net is actually morally acceptable, contrary to their, you know, within a libertarian framework. But the more interesting argument, I think, is, and it's one that I can make both to libertarians and to non-libertarians, is that a basic income is just a better way of fighting poverty than the kind of Byzantine system that we have right now, which is really kind of cobbled together bunch of different systems for fighting poverty, none of which are terribly effective, and all of which in combination are quite expensive and quite top-heavy.
Right, and we've seen people like Milton Friedman even arguing that the government does have some sort of grounds or responsibility to provide for the welfare of the poor.
Yeah, you see it in Milton Friedman, who was actually one of the sort of founding intellectual figures in what's become today the earned income tax credit. So Friedman, early in his books, advocated for what he called a negative income tax, which is essentially a kind of basic income, and one that I find quite attractive, really, which is folded into the tax system. So instead of having a separate kind of welfare branch of the United States government, you just have the tax system, and then if you make more than a certain amount of money, you would pay taxes, just like you and I do. Whereas if you make less than a certain amount of money, you would get money back, so a negative tax. The only real difference between that idea that he came up with and the earned income tax credit, which was eventually implemented, was that in order to qualify for the earned income tax credit, you have to actually be working, whereas the negative income tax would apply to unemployed individuals as well. So he actually kind of lost a bit of his attraction to the earned income tax credit by the time it was put into practice and disavowed it. But Friedman advocated something like this. Friedrich Hayek, who is another libertarian luminary, also advocated for a kind of social safety net, which seemed to have a lot in common with the basic income, though he didn't use quite those words.
So, but the others, people across the political spectrum, they're kind of looking at this and they like the idea of it, particularly some on the left. They don't need to address Milton Friedman. They think this works for them, and they say that this would actually have better outcomes for the economy.
That's right. Yeah. So one of the ideas is that you provide people with cash. They can do more with that cash than they can do with food assistance or housing assistance, right? When you give people these kind of in-kind transfers, they have to spend the money on what you, the government, think they ought to spend that money on, and it makes it very difficult to save, right? You can't really save up food stamps to buy, you know, to invest in your education or to invest in your living situation, whereas money is perfectly fungible, so you can do whatever you want with it. And the idea is that because a lot of people on the bottom end of the economic distribution don't have ready access to capital, there's a lot of wasted entrepreneurial talent there that could be put to use if only you could get some cash into these people's hands. And so you would have not just more access to capital to start a new small business, even something as small as just sort of driving around a car for Uber and giving people rides, but also a kind of safety net to fall back on. So if you've got a part-time job working for McDonald's and you've got an idea for doing something more ambitious, it's a dangerous thing to quit your job and start something new if you don't have some kind of safety net there to catch you. And it's precisely that kind of safety net that the basic income provides.
So the idea is that everyone gets this money regardless of their income?
Yeah, well, here's where you start getting some important differences between the various programs. So with Friedman's negative income tax proposal, not everyone gets money. You get money if your income falls below a certain threshold, and you pay money if it falls above that threshold. With other proposals, like Charles Murray, who is another kind of conservative libertarian thinker, wrote a book called In Our Hands, A Plan to Replace the Welfare State, where he advocated giving $10,000 a person to everybody in the United States. But the catch is, after you start making more than, I think it was $25,000, you start paying back that $10,000 grant with a kind of heavily progressive tax. And it seems like, from my own analysis of the numbers, you really have to do something like that to make the program affordable and to make the grant of a sufficient size to make a real difference in people's lives. If you try to give everybody $10,000 a year, regardless of their income, you would break the bank pretty quickly.
Speaking with Professor Matt Zawinski, he is a professor of philosophy at the San Diego University of San Diego. We're talking about minimum income guarantee. If you've got a question or a comment, the number is 210-614-8980. So people argue that this is a disincentive to work. If people can just stay at home and collect a little bit of money, then that's what they're going to do.
People do make that argument, but the argument does not seem to be well supported by the evidence. Oftentimes what people point to when they make that claim is a series of experiments that took place in the United States between 1968 and 1980 that sought to implement something like Milton Friedman's negative income tax on a small scale. And this was done, I think, in three or four states. And what you did see when you looked at the results of that data was some decline in work output. Two things about that. First, the decline in work output turned out to be fairly small. It wound up being something like, you know, people worked a few weeks less per year than they would have in the absence of the grant. So it's less like dropping out of the job market altogether and more like taking a slightly longer vacation or maybe taking a little bit longer in your job search to find a job that's a good match. The second thing about those experiments is that it turns out that some of the data was actually misleading. If you give people money and you make the amount of money you give them contingent upon how much they say they worked over the course of the year, there's going to be a large incentive to underreport working. And it turns out that once you dig through the data a bit, there was a massive amount of underreporting in those studies. And so people actually worked significantly more than they said they did.
So this doesn't sound like something that many Americans would appeal to them. It doesn't seem it goes against our Puritan background.
It does, but the problem is that Puritanism is expensive and invasive, and it goes against other things in the American political ideology, I think, that we do and should find attractive. There's a desire, which I understand, to give money only to the people who deserve it in some sense and to keep it out of the hands of the people who don't deserve it because they're not willing to work or they're lazy or they're trying to game the system in some way.
Yeah, so why not create jobs for these people even if they're just picking up trash on the highway or wiping out graffiti or sweeping Red Square?
The problem is that that's an expensive thing to do, and it doesn't necessarily provide the same kind of help as allowing people time and money to do what they want with. It might be more of a problem if there was solid evidence that people were wasting this money and putting it to poor use. But in fact, we've got mountains of evidence, not just from the United States, but from really, really poor places like not just Brazil and Mexico, but Chris Blattman, an economist, has done some interesting randomized studies in Uganda looking at how unemployed young men do when you give them a couple of $100 and then just turn them on their loose to do what they wish with. And it turns out they invest that money in their jobs, in their vocations, and they wind up increasing their earnings over a couple of year period by almost 40%. Drug use, alcohol use, tobacco use actually declined rather than going up. So it's appearing that people actually make good choices when you give them the money, and then you don't have to watch them. You don't have to hire some bureaucrat to go snooping around their house or to look at the forms they fill out to make sure that they're spending the money in the way that you think they should be spending it or that they're meeting the eligibility requirements that you set out to be to be eligible for the money. So you end up with a significantly smaller welfare state in terms of bureaucracy. At the same time, you're actually doing more good for the people that you're trying to help.
By not having this safety net, and you allow people to just fall through and become poor, and then there's little opportunity for them to work out of the poverty, do you find that there is a cost to that, where maybe people steal copper and sort of scavenge and raid the environment, do illegal logging and that type of activity?
There's a number of social losses that are associated with poverty. I'm not up on the correlation between poverty and crime to say, you know, how much crime reduction you could affect by providing this kind of safety net. But I mean, one of the losses you avoid is the wasted talent, which is kind of the thing that people who focus on the stimulus aspect of a basic income, to the extent that people aren't working or they have ideas for productive things they could do, but they aren't doing it because they don't have capital. That's a real loss, not just to them, but to society as a whole, who could benefit from those ideas. And so that's another way in which the basic income kind of feeds into a kind of economic growth that benefits everybody.
What do your fellow libertarians tell you about this? This doesn't seem to be the basic libertarian idea.
Yeah, well, I get called socialists a lot by people, by my libertarian colleagues, and then I get called a heartless social Darwinist by my more progressive friends. So I can't win with anybody, it seems. But seriously, though, I think the idea is one that rubs certain segments of the libertarian camp the wrong way. People who think that, you know, there really isn't any role in the state at all for redistribution tend to view not just a basic income but any kind of welfare as utterly unpermissible. But I think there's a more moderate strand of libertarianism exemplified by people like Friedrich Hayek and Milton Friedman,
right,
that is gaining more traction these days.
Okay.
Partly because I think, you know, the moderate ideas are just,
sure,
more defensible on their merits, and partly because that's the only kind of libertarianism that's ever going to get any traction.
Matt Tawinski, we're out of time. Professor of Philosophy, University of San Diego. Thank you so much. This is The Source on KSTX.